Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of elite mountain biking. Now, if the technology is working properly, you'll listen to this while I'm on holiday. Fingers crossed it's worked and you've got the podcast. So unfortunately, I am going to be out of the country for a little while, and I've done as best as I can to get as many guests recorded before I went as possible. Unfortunately, it does mean we're probably not going to have an episode on the 14th of November. I will try and sort that out, but it's looking like it's not going to happen. So apologies for that, but we will be back and resuming normal service on the 28th of November. Once again, thanks to everyone that's been listening. It's really, really nice to hear your feedback. So keep in touch. Let us know what you think to the podcast. An iTunes review goes a long way, so if you've got time, then do that. But also reach out on social media. You can find us on Instagram at Downtime Podcast, on Facebook at The Downtime Podcast, and on Twitter, Downtime Tweets. Okay, so episode 21, we've got another fantastic guest for you. This time it's your 2017 world champion, Miranda Miller. We talked to Miranda about her background in mountain biking, how she got into the sport, her first ever downhill race, how she went through the privateer rank, her move to the specialized gravity team, and obviously her recent success at the World Champs. I really enjoyed chatting to Miranda. I hope you like listening. So without further ado, here's episode 21 with Miranda Miller. Miranda Miller, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Pretty good, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure. So let's get started. It's off-season now, and I'm kind of intrigued. What do you get up to when you're not riding bikes?
Funny question. I don't even know myself. I just got home from Finale, like, at the beginning of the week, so I actually had a pretty good week at home just trying to, get a hold of your life, you know? You've been living in a bag for 6 or 7 months, so it's nice to unpack and, organize your life.
Nice, decompressing a little bit.
Yeah, you just feel like you don't know where anything is, and yeah. No, I've had a good week at home. Installing shells, things like that, you know.
Excellent. How long does it take till you start missing your bike normally then? Do you manage to stay off it for a while, or are you pretty keen to get back out?
I'd say yesterday was the first day that I was kind of like, okay, I'm sort of getting bored now. I want to start, riding my bike or going to the gym, something like that, you know.
Cool. So not, it's
probably,
not long.
Probably been like 2 weeks maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a little bit of a break then. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice one. So I'd like to kind of try and find out a little bit about, where you grew up and how you got into the riding side of things, if you're able to give us a bit of background on that.
Yeah, I grew up in Pemberton, BC, so it's like 20 minutes north of Whistler. Uh-huh. And I lived there until I was 13, and we always kind of, ripped around on bikes and rode the trails in Pemberton. And then it wasn't until I moved to Squamish when I was 13 that bikes sort of became like a sort of a bigger player in my, just like the racing side became a little bit of a bigger player. Like the Squamish cycling community is massive. And, racing was always kind of a big part of elementary school had a little team, and then the high school had a really good team, and you would compete against Whistler and Vancouver and all the different schools like once a week. And then, yeah, that's kind of just how I got into racing. And that was all sort of cross-country racing. And I knew for a fact I didn't like that. And I wasn't very good at it. I would always be passing people on the way down and then just getting owned on all the climbs. Yeah. And, so that's sort of why I think I gravitated more towards downhill racing.
Cool. And how old were you when you did your first downhill race?
I was 14, and I went to a BC Cup in Penticton, BC. I think my mom was going to go visit a friend. And so she's like, there's a race out there. You should come and do it. And, I had a sick hardtail. And I forgot to pack shorts and things like that. So I was just ripping in jeans. And it was myself and Michaela Gatto were the only two in our category. Or maybe she was in the category above, but because she was a few years older, so we combined categories, and she kicked my ass, and I crashed a bunch, and it was one of those things where you weren't discouraged or anything. You're just like you knew you could have done it so much better. So it was kind of probably where it all started.
Awesome. I heard that hardtail even had triple clamp forks on it. Is that right?
Oh, I did. It was sick. Awesome. It was like a Norco Manic and had a 24-inch rear wheel. And like anything I wanted to buy for it, my dad was like, you don't need to buy it. I'll build it for you. And so I had like the most ghetto chain guide that was just like pure steel and like made my cranks and stuff all loose. But it was cool.
Awesome.
So at the time, it was like my dream bike.
Nice. And did you get the bug straight away then, as soon as you had that kind of adrenaline hit of being in a downhill race?
Yeah, I think so. Just like, I remember being so nervous in the start gate. And then as soon as you finished, you're just like, you know, you wanted to go up and do it again and sort of correct everything that you did wrong or things like that. But yeah, I'd say it was sort of instant that I knew I wanted to do more.
And did you ever think at that point that, you know, it could be a career and that you could be as good as you've ended up being?
No, not at all. not for a while, I don't think. Not until, I don't know, the past few years maybe.
Yeah, when did that kind of come? When did you start to think, oh, hang on a minute, I might be onto something here. I feel like I can actually do well at this.
Yeah, probably shortly after. Like, I graduated high school in 2008, and I decided, I was like, oh, I'll take a year off and just ride my bike, because this is kind of the only time I'm really going to get to do it in sort of this capacity. And then 2009, I had a pretty good season, just winning like a few, like the US Open and Garbanzo. It was my first year pro, and I don't know, I just felt like I was riding well. And then, so I decided to take another year off, and you know, now it's almost been 10 years and I haven't gone back to school. But it was never really, I was never like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be paid to do it. And this is how I'm going to make my living. It was more so, I don't really care what I have to do, but I just want to do it kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know. It was never like, this is going to be a career. It was more so, I have a rare opportunity that, you know, some people don't have, and you know, you'd definitely regret it if you didn't try and take full advantage of it.
Yeah, you must have felt like it was the right thing for you to move forward and do it, right? Because it's been a tough road. Yeah,
exactly. And I've been injured a lot, and you know, it's kind of one of those things that I guess is probably the best indicator if you want to keep doing it, because it sucks. But if you're willing to, you know, just get back on the bike and do it all over again, then I guess I'm on the right path.
Yeah.
Or I'm stupid. I don't know.
it makes total sense. I looked at, I was doing some research and I found a list of your injuries. And I mean, I knew you had a few, but it scared me, right? It was a longer list than I expected.
Yeah.
Some pretty serious stuff along the way. How do you deal with the injuries? Do you have a kind of a way that you process it, and how do you return from a bad injury?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard, because like no matter like how bad the injury is, I feel like it's all the same, you know. Whether, I don't know, it's like even the small injuries can be just as mentally kind of taxing as the big ones. Just because you're sidelined from kind of your goals and what you want to do. And especially when you've had so many in a row, they kind of just like build up on each other. I don't know, like you kind of just, you go through phases. Like when it first happens, you sort of think like, oh, like maybe it's not so bad. You know, it'll be easy. It'll be an easy 6 weeks. And then, you know, a week in, you're pretty bored and you're kind of getting over it. And then, yeah, you kind of go through phases, like get depressed, and then you're almost near the end, and you go for your first ride back and it's terrible, and you kind of get depressed all over again. And then I don't know, all of a sudden you're kind of fine, or either you've healed or you've just learned to, you've adapted kind of to how your body works or feels now.
Yeah.
I'd say actually this year was probably the hardest for me.
Okay. Was it
just like mentally?
Was it a knee injury this year? Is that right?
Yeah. So I tore my PCL and bruised my tibia.
Uh-huh.
in Fort William. And it was kind of like, usually when I get hurt, it's sort of, you know, it's like broken bone, or, you know, you're getting surgery, you're going home kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where this, this was bad enough that I had to miss two or three races, but it wasn't bad enough to like set you out completely. You know, you could still kind of do things. Like, you know, in Lenzerheide and Andorra, I could still kind of ride my bike, but I wasn't riding it in a way that I should be, you know, like you felt sort of handicapped the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Despite, you know, like at the time you felt like you're trying as hard as you could, but it wasn't your normal.
Yeah.
And it was really frustrating because you're still there and you're still competing, but you're just like doing terribly, but you don't necessarily know how to fix it. Like, I don't know. It was weird. Like I had bad balance. My balance was off with my knee, and I think my whole sort of left side just wasn't supporting, or sort of like my muscles weren't firing in the ways that they should. And yeah, I don't know. It was hard because I didn't really get a break. You know, I just was going from one race to another, to the next, to the next, to the next. And it wasn't until maybe a week before Cairns that I didn't have like, you know, like the sort of chronic knee pain that I had every day sort of thing. I could fall and it wouldn't be my knee that hurt when I stood up kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Was there any kind of specific exercises or rehab that you did to regain that balance and that control over your body?
Yeah, like, I was trying, like, on the road to do lots of balancing, and our team has a really, really good physio and masseuse with us the whole time, Werner, and he's really good, and he would bring different sort of, like, exercise bands and to help me with sort of progressing as my knee progressed. But you're still concentrating on racing. And it wasn't until like last week I went and saw a physio at home that I kind of figured out exactly what was wrong with that side of, like, you know, like half my glutes and my hip muscles weren't working properly. And so now is kind of the time that I'm focusing on getting those activated and working, just because I hadn't, you know, they kind of just, my body compensated for them for the last like 2-3 months. So yeah.
Interesting. So you've got to kind of take things back to basics a little bit and rebuild some of those almost primal movement patterns then. Is that what the off-season?
Yeah, exactly. Like the super, super annoying exercises that you have to do. You know, it's like simply just lifting your leg, but it's like, it's so hard.
Yeah, the ones that make you look stupid in the gym but are really hard if you try them.
Yeah, exactly. They're so annoying. All you want to do is like squats or something. You're like, why can't I just do squats and deadlifts or fun?
And you're doing the Jane Fonda stuff in the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. You're doing little leg lifts and stuff and sweating.
Interesting. But if it works, it works, right?
Yeah, exactly. You kind of just have to do it.
So I read an interesting little rehab technique you had from one of your injuries. Is it right that you bought a motorbike to rebuild?
Yeah. I broke both my arms in Fort William in 2014, I think, 2014. Yeah, I had a lot of time on my hands, you could say. And I kind of wanted to get a motorcycle, and we found there's this old, he was probably like 90, 95, this guy that lived down the street, and he would get motorcycles, but he's too old to ride them. So he would kind of just get them running and then, I don't know, give them away or sell them. So I picked up this old CX500 for $100, $150. And yeah, I took it all apart. And because a lot of the things I was doing at physio was simply trying to get, like picking things up, you know?
Yeah.
I had a lot of nerve damage in one of my hands. And so I was trying to sort of like trying to get the feeling back and use all your fingers and all your hand correctly. So yeah, I was like picking up the bolts and the, you know, just the motions of wrenches and things like that. And it was all very similar to what I was doing in the hand therapy. And yeah, it was kind of a fun way. And then as soon as I was able to ride a bike again, I sort of just sat in my dad's garage. And I think about a month ago, he finally made me take it out. And so it's now sitting in my garage. So Remy got the bike running. Yeah, he hasn't been out on it. There's still like quite a bit to do, but at least there's proof that the engine works.
Sweet. Nice winter project then.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
It's pretty cool, but, yeah, we'll see when it actually it hits the pavement if it's safe or not.
Yeah, interesting. That'd be a fun ride. Cool. So yeah. You were, you know, you're a privateer on the World Cup circuit for a decent period of time, which is a significant commitment and not to be underestimated. What does it take to put together a privateer World Cup season, and how did you go about doing that and fitting it in and earning a living at the same time?
Yeah, so I definitely had a really good sort of support system at home. The owners of a local bike shop, Corsa Cycles, they would always hire me in the winter and then let me take all summer off. And then I also rented their suite for some extremely reduced rent. And, you know, they kind of just always did things like that. Like the owner would always build me wheels and stuff to go race on. And yeah, they're always just really cool that way. And essentially I kind of just figured out, like, I don't know, you're paying for it, so you might as well just do the races that you want to do. Mm-hmm. To do a full season was sort of unrealistic financially. So the last few years I'd try and do the back-to-back World Cups. A couple years, I think 2015, I decided just to, no, 2016. No, yep, 2016. That was last year, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I decided just to skip Fort William. Decided that I didn't need to go there. But then I went to Leo Gang, and so, yeah, I kind of just picked the races I wanted to go to. I did a few EWSs, and yeah, you pretty much just work. I'd work all winter and try and save as much as possible, and then, yeah, just go to the races with another local Forest Riesco. We kind of just teamed up and rented a van and tried to make it happen.
Sweet.
Yeah, you kind of just, I don't know. I always felt that I was pretty lucky. Like, at the races, like Todd and Dawson and all the guys at SRAM, they always looked after me really well. So at least at the races, I would always have somewhere to, you know, put my bike and keep a bag, and they would always help me with my bike and spare parts and things like that. So I feel like on the whole, I had it pretty lucky as far as being a privateer. Like, you see some of the other kids doing it, and definitely looked way harder than what I was doing, but I don't know. It wasn't easy, but, you know, I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah. Would you say you're kind of fairly organized in your approach over a race weekend as a privateer, or was it just?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you kind of just had to think, you know, you had to think everything out for yourself. You literally had to do everything yourself. So it was, I think it was good. Like, I feel like you kind of had to do that. You see, I don't know, like some of the kids that are on factory teams from the very beginning, they're just, maybe they missed a few steps along the way as well. You know, I mean, they're great riders, but I think being a privateer like that helps you develop a lot more than just, it's life skills, right?
Yeah, for sure. Almost like starting riding on a hardtail rather than going straight to full suspension, right?
Exactly. It's definitely not a necessary step, but it's definitely a useful one if you get to do it or you have to do it.
What do you think are the biggest strengths or skills that you took away from that time as a privateer?
You have to have really good time management. Like you're saying, just organization. You just don't have... You don't have the energy to be unorganized or messy or anything, right? Like, especially for myself, when practice, you know, starts at 8 in the morning, you know, and a lot of the time that meant I would have to ride to the track. And I'd want to be there at like 7:30, so I'd have to leave at 7. So then I'd have to have like a lunch ready and all my gear ready and spares ready and things like that. So you can, I don't know, it's all just being organized.
Yeah,
and it's like anything in life. If you're organized, it's not that hard.
Are you the sort of person that writes all this down? Do you have loads of lists, or like, is it all in your head? How do you structure?
Yeah, I like writing lists, but I also think that I have a pretty good memory. I don't know, just mentally, I think I'm pretty organized.
Yeah, cool. So how did the big move to Specialized Gravity come around then? So that was the big change for you over last winter. How did that come together?
So 2016, I started to, go specialize, sort of took me along to some EWS races with them. And that was pretty cool. And I got to know more of the global team because I was riding for Specialized Canada, which is quite a bit of a smaller operation. It's almost like a distributor kind of thing.
Right.
And so, yeah, I got to know the global team and more importantly, Dan Hugo, who was the global sports marketing director. And yeah, just at the end of the year, we started talking and he was keen on doing a little bit more for me. And I made it pretty clear to him that I didn't really care. I didn't care what happened. I just wanted to ride downhill. There was a bit of a push towards enduro, and I told him if it means I have to do the full EWS so I can do a full downhill season, you know, I'll do it. And it ended up just logistically only making sense for me to be on the gravity team. And yeah, I'm pretty grateful that Laurent and Loic and them sort of took the chance and invited me on board. Because I think I was maybe a bit of an unknown to Laurent, like he didn't really know me, and I knew Finn, obviously, like Finn and I have known each other for a long time, and maybe that helped, and I sort of knew Loic, but it's hard to say, you know?
Yeah, cool. It's a massive change and a big opportunity. So what have the kind of biggest changes been for you over this season from your seasons as a privateer then with that support from Specialized Gravity?
It's just so unreal, like not having to, you know, wake up every day, go to work, go home, train for a couple hours, go to bed, do it all over again. You just get to focus so much more attention on actually becoming better than just trying to do it, you know? Like, I don't know, it's hard because you always felt when you were working full time that you'd kind of get run down and tired, but then it also felt that you couldn't afford to take any time off work, but you couldn't afford to take any time off training either.
Right.
I don't know. You always just felt like you were, I don't know, just fully pinned, you know, and just always having to fight for kind of both those things. Whereas just when you have the support of a full team, you know that all your equipment's going to be the best when you show up, and simply your only job at the races is simply to race your bike, and then in the off season it's just to try and get better than you were before.
Yeah,
I don't know, it's pretty cool. It definitely was an adjustment, but I mean it's unreal.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Has it changed your structure over a race weekend at all? Like, are you still doing kind of the same things in the same order, or have you learned, you know, different ways of going about it, or little tips and tricks that help improve the output of a race weekend?
Yeah, I've definitely noticed the first couple races, that was kind of weird. I was almost trying to do what I was used to doing, you know? And then as we went on, I realized, you know, I didn't have to get up quite that early because I didn't, you know, I didn't have to prep my bike, you know, or make food or things like that. So I was able to sort of streamline kind of my race weekend process, and even just way better warm-ups before I hit the track in the morning, like for practice. Whereas in the past, I never had a chance to do a proper warm-up before practice because I was always trying to, you know, juggle everything else. Just like small things like that, and all those small things add up to be a pretty big difference at the end of the weekend.
Yeah, cool. And you've got some pretty amazing teammates with Loic and Finn on the downhill side, and then Jared and Curtis on the enduro side. What have you learned from those?
It's crazy. It's on the downhill side. It's, I don't know. They're the coolest guys to be around. They're just so, like, I'm competitive, but I'm perhaps more competitive with myself, mm-hmm. or like maybe it's like an inwards competitiveness, whereas everything they do is a competition, like everything. So I don't know. It's kind of fun to be in that sort of environment. It kind of makes, I don't know, makes you care more. It's really cool.
Yeah, it gets you fired up. And even,
yeah, and just being able to do a track walk with someone, like, you know, I'd be walking the track and I'd be alone, and or with Forrest, and you know, you wouldn't have anyone to talk about lines with, whereas Finn and I will walk with Kevin, our mechanic, and it's really good because all of a sudden there's two extra kind of perspectives to look at, and they're both really good with you know, like maybe there's lines that Finn can do but I can't do, mm-hmm. and Finn knows that, and so he's really good at showing me, you know, the lines that he thinks he'll do, but then also you know, maybe like a good backup line, things like that. And then, yeah, just, and just having Kevin work on your bike and your setup, it's friggin', it's unreal.
Nice. Do you get involved with the telemetry side of things or not? I know Loic is well into it.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's Loic. That's Loic and Jack's kind of deal. Uh-huh. So to actually use all that equipment effectively, you have to be really experienced with it. So for me to put that on my bike, that's not going to do anyone any favors.
Right.
Because you, as a rider, you have to be able to know sort of how to take that data and how to give the feedback. And then, you know, Jack has to then be able to figure out how to apply all that. And it, I don't think it's not quite as simple as some people think. But because Loic's doing all that, that sort of trickles down to Finn. And then from Finn, it kind of trickles down to me. So for sure it helps, especially on tracks where it's changing all the time. And, you know, Loic will have a later practice than I. So he'll be experiencing the track later on in the day. And a lot of that setup will then help me prepare for the next day.
Interesting. So you'll take learnings from Loic's later runs to feed into your setup.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously it's a dialed down approach, but it does definitely help just for, you know, the balance of the bike and things like that.
Interesting. So do you think you've managed to get the bike set up generally much better this season with the help of the full team?
Yeah, honestly, like our bikes this year were amazing. Like between just the work that Kevin and Jack do and the Olin suspension, it was mind-blowing. Just I think the big thing is too, just having someone knowledgeable set it up for you. Whereas for me, I could always in the past, like, tell that my bike wasn't doing something, you know, like it was doing something I didn't like, but I didn't necessarily then know how to translate that into, oh, I should add a click of high speed compression or, you know, things like that. Like that, I'm not maybe technically sound that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the SRAM guys would always do the best that they could, but that wasn't really their job, right? They hadn't walked the track, and they always gave me pretty good pointers, but it wasn't nearly as in-depth as this.
Cool. Yeah, it must be really interesting learning more about how it all works, and you get that technical side, I guess, by being exposed to it more.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I've loved that whole side of it this year.
Nice. So Specialized clearly look after you really, really well. But I'm going to ignore all the bike stuff now and talk about food, because I'm kind of interested, like, on an average race weekend with Specialized, what would a race day menu look like? What sort of things would you be eating and when on a race day?
Yeah, so this year we had Anne-Marie as sort of our assistant manager slash like team mom. Mm-hmm. And so she always did a really good job at having, we always preferred sort of the, you know, for example, she would have, say, rice and like scrambled eggs and lot like avocados and lots of veggies, things like that. Yeah. That was kind of always our go-to. Finn, it was usually a pot of Nutella. Loic was into the mashed potatoes, so she always had sort of like a hot lunch ready for us. And it was pretty good, just so much better than eating a sandwich or something, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And is there a favorite pre-race breakfast that gets you ready and gives you good energy for the day?
I've always been, that's what I've always struggled with in Europe, is I'm a big breakfast person. I'm always down with some eggs or some sort of like protein source. I never did well with like the coffee and pastry diet.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time, yeah, in Europe you'll be eating hopefully hard-boiled eggs, maybe some meat and cheese, and it's usually pretty good. But
nice.
It's nice to come home. A lot of the time we'll be at like a catered place, you know. There's only a few races where we cook our own breakfasts and things like that, just logistically, right. That's kind of just how it worked out.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And does the food that you'd eat on an enduro race weekend differ from a downhill weekend, or is it similar kind of demands on the body and therefore similar food and similar volume of food?
I probably eat more on an enduro weekend. It's funny, like at the end of a downhill weekend and the end of an enduro weekend, I'd say I'm just as tired, but it's a totally different kind of tiredness.
Okay, interesting.
I feel like on a downhill weekend, say like Monday morning, I feel like I've been run over by a truck. And an enduro Monday morning, you just feel, it's like a, you're not like, it's not achy, it's not like aches and bruises or anything like that. You're just, it's just like a physical draining, you know, you've just, because obviously you've done a whole bunch more riding than you would on a downhill weekend, but honestly, I think I'm just as tired. It's just in a different way. But yeah, I think I eat way more on an enduro weekend. Yeah. Lots of rice and like salmon and chicken, especially if you're with Curtis and Jared. They're all about salmon and chicken.
That's the race fuel.
Salmon, chicken, and rice.
Fair enough. Yeah. Sounds good to me. Cool.
Yeah.
Right. So we've talked about a lot of bits and bobs in the past, but let's bring it up to date and have a bit of a chat about the World Champs Week, which obviously turned out pretty damn good for you. Tell us a little bit about the week. Like you said, you were feeling a bit better with the injury side of things kind of a week or so before, but how did the run up to the event and the practice side of things go?
Yeah, so we got to Australia early. We got there about a week early. We went a few days after Val d'Isle, and it was just such a nice place. We had a beautiful house with a pool, and it was kind of good. Like look, Finn and I would go to the gym and sort of rip around on bikes, and we're just having a pretty good time. So it was definitely nice. We kind of had like a nice relaxing week before, and then just as soon as this weekend started, it gets pretty full on. Like I don't know. It's for women. We start at like 7:30 in the morning practice.
Yeah, it's brutal, right?
Yeah, so you kind of just have to start kind of preparing for that. Like you need to be, I don't know, you need to be at the track and alert for 7:30. And for once, Finn was with me, so that was actually pretty nice, because usually he practices with the pro men. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was actually kind of nice to have Finn along. You know, we could share the struggle together. Yeah, it was a good weekend. It was good when it was over. I would say I definitely struggled a lot all week. Like the first day of practice, I thought was sick. Like the track was really good, and it wasn't an overly technical, it wasn't like a really hard track. And so the first day was really good because the track was still in good condition and you just had good speed everywhere. You know, like your third or fourth run down, you felt pretty good. But then it was one of those tracks that just kind of went backwards from there. Just once everyone rode it, and we had three days of practice. We had way more practice than we usually do. And so, yeah, the track just got worse and worse, but I was still trying to push in ways as if I could go faster and faster when the track was sort of almost going slower and slower.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, pretty much up until race day, all I did was sort of tomahawk my way down the hill.
A few crashes in the run up then.
Pretty much every run I would eat shit somewhere.
Well, you got it all out of your system.
Yeah, like the rock garden was funny. It was so deceiving. You do the main line through the rock garden and nail it, and you're like, oh, like it's not even that bad. And then you'd try and go in next time with a little bit more speed, and you'd be like an inch offline or half an inch offline and just go down so hard. And so it was interesting. Like Loic and a whole bunch of people, everyone swapped lines sort of the last day to sort of almost taking that B line. Uh-huh. Sort of around the rock garden and cut into the end of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, because I feel like your success rate was just dropping considerably as the weekend went down. You know, the first day in practice, I had no problems with it. And then all of a sudden I started crashing more and more and more. But for reasons like there wouldn't be something yet you would notice. You would think that you're on the right line and then something would grab you and just throw you.
Interesting. So yes, you were looking for some maybe slightly more repeatable lines then, I guess, slightly safer lines to
yeah,
ensure
exactly.
A good just, run.
Yeah, a Saturday was really hard for me. We had like, I think, 3 hours of practice, and I crashed once or twice on pretty much every single run. And I felt maybe I was just trying to ride the track in an unrealistic way, I guess. Like I was trying to find something that maybe I didn't have or wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had a good talk with Kevin, like my mechanic. We kind of just talked about the season and sort of, I guess, maybe my frustrations. I was sort of like at a point where I had this great opportunity, but because I had been injured, I sort of felt like I had missed an opportunity to take advantage of it, you know, like just being hurt and not being able to sort of do what I wanted to do. I think maybe that was weighing on me as well. You know, trying to do something to make up for what I thought was a shitty season.
Right. So pushing harder almost as a result.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, you want something to show for yourself at the end of the year when you've had a shit year. And yeah, I don't know. And then before my run on Saturday, I decided, I was like, well, sort of my plan of attack was just to be patient really. And I was there's that video of Stevie talking, I think, I don't know what race it's at, but he was just saying how, you know, best case scenario, or worst case scenario, he's pumped, and best case scenario, he's damn pumped kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's a good point. Like, you know, look where I am. So I don't know, it just sort of helped me relax and I felt pretty much no pressure going into that race, you know. World Champs is a funny race. I felt like the only people who could lose that race was maybe Tracy and Mick, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
In a way. Yeah. You know, everyone else, it's like, this doesn't have anything to do with like your overall or anything. You know, obviously everyone else wants to win, but...
Yeah, it's an all-in kind of race.
I think no one had that pressure that those two had.
So how was your run? Would you say you kind of... Did you back off a little bit and try and put in a good safe run, or were you still going for it?
No, it was just a safe, clean run. You know, the corners up top were just totally shit kicked, and there was nothing you can do about it because they're so narrow. Like, you can't change lines or anything. You kind of just have to take it. And so I was just mainly trying to keep speed through them, because a lot of the time you'd hit these holes and almost come to a complete stop. So, you know, I just had little goals like that the whole way down, you know, was just to carry speed through all the corners, whether, you know, it's not necessarily a high speed, but at least your wheels are moving kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then pretty much as soon as you got out of the rock garden, you're kind of like, okay, you know, now you can maybe not push, but just not be quite as sort of cautious. And then, yeah, I knew I could have a really good sprint. Like, I feel like I'm strong that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I decided just to have a smooth kind of safe run and then go as hard as I could on that sprint. So.
Yeah. And then a little sit down in the hot seat.
Yeah.
How did that feel? That's a hell of a place to be.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those things where pretty much my goal was to cross the line at first, you know?
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, I was hoping for maybe a top five, and, yeah, it was just one of those races where everyone was kind of going for it and making lots of mistakes. And I feel pretty bad for Pom Pom. Like, her time was obviously faster. And yeah, it's shitty to have a mistake like that at World Champs. Like, that shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
I guess these things do happen. But yeah. But yeah, it's just one of those things. It was funny. Like, as at first, I was like, oh shit, like, I think I just meddled. You know, like, and then I was like, oh, second. And then I was like, holy fuck. And people were like yelling at me. They're like, Marta, like, you might actually win. I was like, I know, right?
That must be a crazy feeling.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I definitely probably didn't feel real. People were like, well, why aren't you like more excited or whatever? I was like, well, of course I am, but I don't know. This is still me. Like, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to like cry and jump up and down, but I'm definitely still very happy and excited about it.
Yeah, it's awesome. How does it feel now? Has it sunk in? Does it feel real?
I guess, yeah. But I mean, yeah, I just, it's funny, just like the first race I happen to win, it happens to be that one, you know?
Yeah, it's the biggie which is
a bigger deal, I guess, than most. But I mean, it's definitely pretty cool. And especially, I've had a little party for Sam Gaze, Loic, and I at Rock Desert. And that was really cool. They had like a jersey presentation for us, and that was just, yeah, that was pretty special. And I think maybe it'll mean, I don't know, I think that race just symbolizes a little bit more than just like winning a jersey. It was just sort of a, you know, whether I was first or second or third or fifth or whatever, you know, I still had a run that I could still sort of be happy about at the end of the weekend.
Yeah, put your season away in a way that you're happy with.
Yeah, exactly. Just have something to go into the off season to be, you know, a little bit happier about. And
Yeah, yeah. A lot happier about it. It's awesome. It doesn't get much yeah. better, does it? I guess coming into the off-season.
Yeah, I think maybe the first race I do in the jersey, it'll be that's when it'll be kind of real, you know.
Yeah. Do you think it changes anything? Do you feel more pressure kind of going into next season, or is it just same old off-season routine and get stuck in again?
Exactly. It was. You know, I think if anything, it just helped. It wasn't any sort of additional pressure because I wasn't, you know, like no one thought I was going to win that race, you know. So it wasn't like, oh, now I've got to go win World Cups. It's more so maybe proof that I can be up there with them.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to next season and hopefully an injury-free run and seeing how you get on. It's yeah. going to be fun. Cool.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah, and a super exciting, you know, the women's category these days is super competitive. There's so many people in it now that can win and that can challenge. So, yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. Watch. And they just changed the protection rules and stuff, I guess, for next year. So it's going to make it even more.
Yeah, good. Good stuff. We look forward to it. We're getting close to the end of our time together today, Miranda, but we've got a couple of questions that we've asked most of our guests so far. So we'll give you those two and see what you come up with. The first one is if you had a time machine and you could go back and give some advice to yourself aged kind of 15 or 16, what advice would you give?
Oh. Fuck. I don't know. I'm pretty happy with everything that's happened. Even all my fuck ups. I think that's the best way to learn. 15 or 16. Man. I don't know.
Just do it. Do it. Do what you did.
Yeah, keep doing what I did.
Yeah, cool. And the other one is if you
had it pretty good.
Yeah, well.
I lived in Squamish, you know, like.
Yeah, very true. I've never visited, but it's definitely on the list of places to get to on a bike. It sounds pretty amazing. Yeah. Cool. And then the other one was if you had £100, which is probably about $100 these days.
Probably like $1 million these days.
Yeah, who knows?
Canadian dollars.
A decent amount of money to spend on something to improve your performance on a bike. What would you recommend that our listeners go out and spend that on? It could be, you know, it can be componentry, tires. Kit. Okay, there you go. No messing. Tires.
Like, it's your contact points, you know, like I think those are the most important parts on your bike. And I feel like those are the ones that people let wear out the most.
Okay. Yeah, you see a lot of people riding around on worn out rear tires and.
Yeah, like shitty tires and like busted up grips and stuff. It's like, well, the grips are where. So it's holding you to the bike, and then your tires is what's holding your bike to the ground. So
if you had to be limited to one tire from the Specialized range, because I'm assuming it would be a Specialized tire that you'd choose, which one would you go for as kind of the best all-rounder if you could only afford to have one set of tires for your bike?
A Butcher 2.3.
Okay. Are there compound options in those?
I'd go downhill casing.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
not good and tough.
I run those on my trail bike. They're heavy, but I don't know. I like them. They feel good.
Cool. Yeah,
I like the stiffer sidewall and stuff.
Better than getting punches as well. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nice one. Well, thanks.
You blew all your money on tires. You don't have tube money.
Yeah. True. But thanks for your time today. We really appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule and having a chat.
No worries. It's easy.
Cool. If people want to find out more and kind of follow you on social media, whereabouts can they find you?
Instagram for sure. Miranda Miller MTB. Kind of a slacker on Facebook, so I'd say Instagram is the best.
Nice one. All right. Well, we'll put the link in the show notes on the website as well, so people can find it there too.
Cool.
Nice one. Well, thanks for your time, and we wish you wish you all the best for next season.
Cheers. You too, Chris.
Well, that's it for episode 21. Really hope you enjoyed listening. Once again, apologies, we're not likely to have an episode on the 14th of November, but we will be back on the 28th. We'll have another great guest for you, and then it'll be business as usual from there. So until next time, get out and ride.